transcript. This will be the GSO board session going from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome Steve Crocker, Fadi Jihadi, and the rest of the ICANN board to our ICANN, board GMSO council session. We've talked a little bit about this as a council, and I've talked with Steve about trying to do things a little differently this time. So let me just let Steve make a couple of opening remarks, and I'll come back and hopefully frame our discussion, and then we can kick off with what I hope will be a productive and relatively open-ended discussion that gives us a chance to try things a little differently than we have perhaps before.
Thank you, Jonathan. It's a real pleasure to be here. As I've said in previous times, in these interactions where the board meets with the different constituencies and organizations, we've tried to evolve from a kind of pro forma process into one in which we actually have as much substantive discussion, as much direct, frank engagement as can be done in a setting like this where there's limited time and a lot of people and so forth, but nonetheless, try to make it real. And we're kind of in a continual evolution process. So the good news for you is that we have a rather onerous schedule, and all of Tuesday, I think, is taken up by these kinds of meetings for the board, and you're catching us at the beginning when we're still fresh. I don't know what it's going to be like at the end of Tuesday when we've been through some number that we can't even count. So with that, let me just say thank you. It's really a privilege for us to be able to spend time with you and to listen to you, and it's really the listening that is most important from our point of view. There's very little in the way of messages that we want to try to get across, and it's much more in terms of trying to understand what are the main currents and the main issues on your mind.
Thank you very much, Steve, and we welcome the very fresh ICANN board to our meeting, and that's great. So thank you again for coming and for taking the time to spend with us. I think I'm going to make a couple of opening remarks, and I'm very much hoping that that our council members and board members will take up the challenge of making this an interactive and engaged session. I think just a couple of remarks, and has made this. I hope I'm not boring those of you who were in the GAP meeting before, but you know, this council was constituted in its current form, including with myself as chair at the Toronto meeting. We've focused on a few key items, and that's working as efficiently and as effectively within our existing processes as we possibly can. So we've been focused on our own throughput and efficiency. We've been focused on our own effective internal relationships and working in a collegiate and constructive way. And we've also been focused on thinking about how we might best engage with groups outside of our own council and indeed the GNSO, and I think we've had some early fruits without wanting to preempt or anticipate things too much. We have had a constructive meeting ahead of lunch with the GAC that was certainly had some positive indications of how we might take up the particular challenge from arising out of the ATRT, which is the early engagement of the GAC in the GNSO or indeed in the policy process. So we've reached out and built some bridges, and we're actively seeking to forge and further develop these. I think my personal view, and I haven't fully tested this with the council, but and I'm sure there'll be some more discussion on this, but my personal view is when there are existing structures which we have clearly in place, and it's been tremendous work, for example, as we just said, to the GAC in our own policy development process, for example, we might as well, one of the thinking about working effectively and efficiently together is that we, before we say any of those structures or processes are in any way have their shortcomings, which inevitably they will do, but people have gone so far as at times to suggest that they are, you know, seriously flawed or fundamentally flawed. I think we owe it to ourselves to show that we can work together effectively, efficiently, and in a collegiate way. And I'm tremendously encouraged by what we have managed to achieve over the last short period together. I think as far as our work with the board, one of my concerns was that we've sort of struggled to reach, to find the right tone in the past, and we sort of, as Steve alluded to as well, we sort of tossed one set of ideas over another set, and my concern is we've sort of talked past one another a little, which is why I talked with Steve in the run-up to this meeting about perhaps having a slightly different style where we put items on the table, and he very graciously said, well, why don't you let the council lead on the topics and issues that are of concern to the council, and so that's really the genesis of the way in which the slightly experimental way of interacting together took place. So whilst we are very keen to work as collaboratively and as positively as we can, we're also collectively very keen as a council to in a sense reassert our position at the heart of the role as policy manager within the GNSO, and perhaps we'll expand on that and talk a little bit more about that. So really what we're proposing is an open and it's in a sense free-flowing discussion and try to focus on some of the sort of strategic themes and issues that are either on our current radar but with a full view to looking forward how we might work as effectively as possible and as with the rightful recognition and place that the GNSO Council deserves within the multi-stakeholder system that we all appreciate and feel so positively and strongly about. So, really, some of the kind of topics we want to tease out and discuss a little bit more are making sure that we have a common view and understanding of the council's role and function as a policy manager, and some of the challenges we face in that role, and in particular in the context of this sort of rapid implementation and the pressure to go to market, if you like, with the new GTLDs, and some of the challenges that's posed with requirements for rapid turnaround of advice and responses. The council and our processes are sometimes seen as, or sometimes characterized perhaps as clumsy and long-winded. We actually think that they are thorough and multifaceted and allow for substantial and thorough input, but we also recognize there is a need both now and in the future, and we have in part, although they are relatively informal mechanisms for responding, and we've shown a willingness to respond rapidly and efficiently, and somehow we've got to manage that tension between that rapid turnaround of advice yet not undermining our role, which is the responsibility we are given as councillors is to not act as a legislative body but as a policy manager within this process. So there's a really fine tension there that we want to tease out and talk with you a little bit. We have our own plans which are early in their formation, but nevertheless we want to act on fast on this whole issue of policy, and we've chosen to call it policy and implementation in our discussion yesterday rather than policy versus implementation. We think that's perhaps not the right framing of the issue, and it's perhaps more constructively phrased as policy and implementation. So those are some of the issues that are on our. I'll post those up, Wolfgang, if you could put those up on the projector, so that they are there as an aid memoir rather than as an actual structure for the discussion. One of the other things that's also come up is there seems to be another overarching theme that's going to challenge us both in our interaction with the GAC and probably more broadly is the concept of public interest and what that means in our context. So I think I will no longer hog the microphone. I hope I've set the scene and framed some of the issues adequately here. I'll open the floor up now to councillors and board members to hear from you whether you're aware of some of these issues and how they are for the council, whether any councillors would like to speak and perhaps either correct anything I've said or add to or reformulate the way I've positioned it. maybe let me do that, if you'll indulge me, Steve Fardy, and your board colleagues, just for a moment to hear from any of the other councillors if they want to add to anything I've said before we open the discussion up more generally. Thank you. John.
John Rard with the Business Constituency. Thank you all for coming. Jonathan's phrase, reasserting the council's role at the center of things, prompts a thought, because if that is indeed one of the things that we want to embark upon, it comes at a time when we are anticipating the GNSO review. So over the course of the next 6 months, we will wind up not just analyzing what we're doing, but what we should be doing. And according to the review, we're looking at an evaluation of our continuing purpose and the effectiveness of the council, of the GNSO as an ICANN supporting organization, and the council, of course, is a creature of the GNSO. So one of the things that I would like to perhaps hear from the board is, how do you think, what do you think that we ought to hang on that framework as we move forward in contemplating that review?
Debating what extent should say what's on my mind versus sort of hanging back and not falling into a trap. I will pass it in a minute, but actually, let me thank you for the cue. Suggest that in a second I'll ask if any board members want to offer an opinion. One of the most obvious things that has been in the air, and you know, is that with the expansion of the GTLD space comes the expansion of the number of players and the contracted parties house. And so that just naturally puts stress on the system and challenges whether or not the existing structure is the right thing or what. There are other similar kinds of challenges in terms of adding constituency, excuse me, on the non-contracted side of the house, the house of the non-contracted parties. One can deal with these incrementally, or one could come back and say, well, maybe there's an entirely different way to structure things. I'll just say personally, not on behalf of the board, that when I finally turned my attention to focus on what the structure of the GNSO was and discovered that there were four levels of structure for this operation, the supporting organization, the two houses, each house has multiple stakeholder groups, each stakeholder group has multiple constituency, and I had to refrain from using the cadence of, as I was going to St. Ives, I met a man with seven wives, each wife had seven cats, and so forth. One has to wonder if that's the right structure to engage in the set of issues and be effective at the things you had. So I'll just leave it there. Anybody want to chime in here? Go ahead.
So I think the question was directed to me. I'll answer it. At the last meeting in Toronto, we discussed with a number of different stakeholder groups the concept that we were moving the review structure towards. Since that time, we've continued to think our way through the evolving way of doing reviews in tech, and we've also begun to look at what is the relationship between the ATRT review and the other AOC type reviews and the organizational reviews. And so we're now looking also at where we can do some harmonization so we can prevent what might be duplication. We're also looking at these processes that produce the recommendations, if you will. At some point in time, those things really need to be put into the strategic planning process. It's well enough to take recommendations and implement them and get them put in place, but at some point in time, you really got to put them into the structure, and the only way to do that really is in the strategic planning process. So we have begun to look at all of that. Also, there is a degree of element that there's we don't want to overstress the organization under review by having them to be continually being looked at. And so we're also looking at how we can minimize the impact of that to occur. And so we're also looking at perhaps shaping some of this to look more like a process or control audit, in which case the staff would be more involved with. So if you were to look at what we were describing in Toronto as the micro phase or pronged approach of the review process, and the fact that all those things carried the objective criteria, that they can be easily answered, and most of them can be answered by examination of records and reports that do exist, that would be more of the staff interfacing, just providing the records and reports and looking at things that happen. And so you wouldn't necessarily see a large number of interviews and so forth associated with that. And you more likely would see interviews occurring, for example, in the ATRT when they look at the objective ECHO, the E, which talks about the policy processes. And I suspect that they'll probably spend more time on it this time than they did last time because they did all those other things last time. And so we have to look at how we can put those things together. So consequently, from the standpoint of the review itself, the organizational review of the GNSO probably will not commence until sometime in the third quarter of this year. And I've already had some conversations with the chair of the ATRT as far as how we can do some amalgamation to make sure that we don't cross lines and that we don't overly tax the organization. So does that help?
Yes, thank you, Chris. I just one very brief comment. I just wanted to welcome what Ray said about recognizing that the potential impact of a review on productivity, and I'm tremendously concerned about our productivity and effectiveness and the role we play, and so that needs to be delicately balanced with the need for reviews. And the other brief comment is that I think it's very easy to make a review synonymous with restructure, and whilst one may follow the other, it shouldn't be assumed that they follow each other. So those are my two very brief comments. Thanks, Chris, for indulging me.
Could I basically respond back to you real quickly? Carrying on that discussion about what you just mentioned with restructuring, actually that should more so come out of a strategic planning process than it should come out as a result of a review. There could be some recommendations from a review or a process control audit which would indicate that a modification of restructuring should occur. However, it's once you get into the strategic planning process where you rethink about that, and that's where you start looking at your strengths, your weaknesses, you know, your challenges and opportunities. And so that is probably where it would really reside. And so I would not necessarily, unless something, let's put it this way, is absolutely so grossly wrong that you wouldn't be surprised if somebody says this has to change. I wouldn't necessarily see a strong recommendation coming out of any review that says that this has to go away. But you may see, as a result of looking at these things, a comment or recommendation that says that you may want to look at doing these things slightly differently, or you may want to organize slightly differently to do that. So from the restructuring challenge, I don't think that you would ever see something that says do away with it.
No problem at all. Sort of halfway between Ray's helicopter view of the whole of the process and Steve's specific thing about, you know, a topic for review. And speaking of somebody who's been on the other end of a review as chair of the CCNSO, I just think it's really important to remember that you do have a quite substantial say in the terms of the of reference. And it's important that you get clear what it is that you think you might want to take out of the court for the review and negotiate that. For just to give you a specific, with the CCNSO review, we were very clear that money was not to be a part of this review. We did not want the review to look at CCDLD contributions to ICANN, and the review did not look at that. So I'd encourage you to think about making very clear statements about what you want in the review and anything that you specifically want out and why that should be out.
Chris, thank you very much. I too have the experience when I was chair of ESSAC of being on the other side of the review process, and I think your advice is spot on. My recollection is that it was the GSO that was the first that was started in the series once upon a time, and then dragged on for a very, very long time, partly because of the learning curve of doing it, of being the first. When I was chair of ESSAC, I watched this process, and ESSAC was in the middle of the pack, and I said to myself, we're gonna try to engage and help drive this process and try to make it as smooth and as effective as possible and as efficient as possible. And I think we were actually first over the line of all the reviews, even though we started in the middle of the pack. So I think it's very, very possible, and I would strongly encourage, very much on the lines of Chris said, to proactively get in there and use it as if it's your choice that of being reviewed in the way that you would choose to structure it and try to use it as a positive process rather than just simply a burden to be bearing.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks. Well, I've got a couple of people starting to come in the queue. I suspect, Ray, you coming back on this direct topic. I've then got Yoav and Bruce.
To the matter which Chris raised, that's exactly what we were doing in Toronto. We were raising that, and we also, at the time, were encouraging people to participate in the development of the criteria. We will continue to do that so that in the end, it really goes back to the point is that, A, you should know what's going to be looked at, and B, you should have a say in what it is. And actually, it's very constructive to do that because you may be able to suggest better ways of looking at it. So it is embedded in this process right now.
Thank you. Yoav.
Yeah, thank you. Yoav Karim with the Council for the Registrars. I want to go back to the opening statement that Jonathan, just talk about the issues that we currently see as problematic. I think we've been seeing a few cases recently that the council in general, or councillors, or some stakeholder groups feel that processes were done in a way that circumvented the GNSO council and the GNSO in general. First of all, we want to make sure that the board is aware of this view of us that these things, I think we've tried previously to stress that out. It's important that you will be aware of that we feel that things are sometimes done not in the proper process. Saying that, I personally can understand that the reason for that for these cases came from the fact that in a vibrant business environment, sometimes you have to react in quicker ways, and it's clear, it's been seen by many people in this community that the PDP is a long process and you cannot wait for things to happen. But what happened when you don't get the views of all stakeholder groups in different cases, then problems may occur in later stage. I'll just give a small example. We'll probably talk more specific about it later with our session with Fadi. We've been talking about it over an hour yesterday. An example like IDN variants that were not considered in the implementation of the TMCH. This is a real problem. And if input was provided at the right time previous to implementation, that might have been resolved. It still can be resolved on time. I'm not saying it's not, but this is just a small example. And it's important for me, as a member of this community, that if we are going to go through a review or restructure or something out of type, that we will at the end find a way that processes in the GNSO can be faster. So stakeholder groups or constituencies' views on different issues can be provided faster. And so we won't see these circumvents happening again. I think there are ways to resolve this, practical ways to resolve this, and make sure that we have the possibility to provide input quickly, not always to have a very long P2P process. And if we go that way, this review restructure, I think we will all feel that we get better results. Thank you.
Thanks, Yoav. I had Zahid next.
Thank you. I just wanted to say it's a very good point about the IPN variants.
Sorry, Zahid, I've skipped over Bruce.
I'm sorry.
And I apologize. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Just a couple of things. One thing, a little bit of history, is one of the things the GNSO Council did in that very first review is it did a self-review. And I thought that was probably a better piece of work compared to the external review, just giving my personal opinion. And that self-review probably focused a bit more on improving working group operations and structures and things, and it wasn't a restructure to put your mind, because I don't think that's really added much value. So just encourage them to think about that. Do your own self-review, because often when you're doing reviews of employees or any group, actually, you ask them to reflect themselves first. And then get an external review to have a look at that. So that's one thing that's worth looking at. Go and have a look at the original review. See if you still agree with it. That was done by the GNSO itself. The other thing is, picking up on the earlier comment you were making, Jonathan, is you, and I think others have made, is they'd like to get the GNSO back into the centre, so to speak, of the policy process. And I think what you're seeing happening is there's a reaction to the past performance of some particular policy processes. We use HUIS as a classic. And there's a lack of trust. And so people feel that if you put it in the GNSO, two things may happen. One, it may take a long time, but even worse, it may get nowhere. And that's that concept of the stalemate, that it's getting nowhere, is one of the biggest risks that why people don't want to initiate the GNSO process. And it's one of the things you might look at the self-review is, what do you do when things start to get stuck? Because the history of the GNSO, and I was chair at the time, but there were individuals in this community that left the community. They were so badly burned, at Rossrake, for example. Some have come back. Jordan Buchanan's come back after a few years wearing a different hat. But people put a huge amount of work into some of these policy processes. And when they got stuck and no outcome, they just had enough, so we burnt the volunteers. So it's the other thing to consider, that volunteers put a huge amount of time. If they get an outcome, they feel that their time has been well spent. If they don't get an outcome, they'll either leave the volunteer part of the organisation, or they'll just insist that the board ignore the GNSO and come up with some other process.
Bruce, if I may respond, Zahid, just briefly. First of all, thank you. I mean, your wisdom and experience in this is much appreciated. And so are the other board contributions that we've heard. For me, certainly, are very encouraging about the way in which the review might take place, the outcomes. And I think that was the tone of our council meeting, just to reflect that when we discussed this. We very much, I only know the cricketing analogy, so it'll work with some of you, but not all of you. We very much had a sense of wanting to get, we feel we've been on the back foot, and therefore there is an issue with our, we are perhaps on the defensive, and we very much would like to get onto the front foot, not to be aggressive, which is why I use the word assertive, but to reassert and productively reassert our position and our role. And so there is a willingness to work efficiently and effectively, and notwithstanding that, I think it must be within, we understand that the review needs to take place, and that's a very constructive thing of us doing that, elements of that ourselves and having an active part in it. Let me go next to Zahid, who's in the queue. I've got Jeff, and then Thomas, and then Milton.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I agree with the invariance issue. It has been a great concern. I know there were some board members in the room yesterday when this was being discussed, and there are fairly a number of developing country concerns with regard to there being no policy with regard to IT invariance. So I really appreciate the board looking into this. So I'd support you on that. On the issue of restructuring, I think I just want to clarify that the CSG is actually not a leader. It is actually three different stakeholder groups in a sense. And there is this sense of bypassing the board, the usual policy process for, I expect two reasons I think that's come out. One is a feeling of disenfranchisement, which basically leads to the stalemate. The voting thresholds being of such a nature through the last negotiation that some folks feel that they're not able to get that done. It's possibly the whole of the non-contracted party house that may feel that the structure is not working. I know that definitely the commercial stakeholder group feels that it's not working. And so as part of the review, it would be important to see how we can improve that so that you don't feel that you're sending any requests to a stalemate organization or sending requests to something that just takes too long. So the circumvention stops. But in the current circumstances, I understand why you had to do that. I know I have, as a possibility of time, just wondering a very, very quick question and maybe slightly off point. The BC and us were really curious at the new GTLD process, and look maybe at Fadi. In the contention sets, plurals and singulars weren't seen as a contention. So you have auto and autos, cars and cars, kid and kids, but they weren't considered contentions. This has raised some concerns. I know it's off topic, but just want to leave that with you. Thanks.
Thanks, Sahid. Fadi, would you like to respond or just put that aside for the moment?
Yeah.
I think I've got Thomas in the queue. I've got Jeff next, and then Thomas, and then Milton.
Hi, Jeff Newman. I want to try to bring us back to the topic and latch on to one thing that Sahid said. I think there is a growing feeling by the GNSO, and I'm not saying I'm trying to reflect our discussion yesterday, although some people seem afraid to actually say it, so I'll say it, that we are being circumvented, right? They do believe that, yes, there's the who is circumstance, right, that we come to a stalemate and, you know, it's hard. Who is a tough issue. It's not only divided the GNSO, it's divided pretty much everybody in the ICANN community for 15 years now, and I know because I was there in the very first ones, too. So I don't think who is a good example to ever use, because that's just a polarizing one. We're going to try to work through it. We're going to try to give it another shot. But there are instances where we actually do come out with a finding, where we do come out with a policy, where we do come out with a letter saying that something is policy. And then we get circumvented in that. We get basically, maybe there's a disagreement, but nobody comes back to us. So we send a letter on February 28th that says, and I don't want to discuss the specific example because I don't think it's productive, but the letter itself said, we find X, Y, and Z policy. The council believes this is policy. But then we get a decision from the board that does it anyway, without ever coming back to the council, without ever coming back to us and discussing the issue with us. And one of the things that the GNSO Council discussed yesterday is that we feel like we don't have to have you agree with us all the time. That's not what we're saying. But at least have some sort of consultation back with the group if you do disagree. That we almost feel like you kind of owe that to us as the policymaking body, especially in circumstances where we actually do have a finding that something, or we actually do get together and come out with something. We think that that's probably, we'd like to see that incorporated into future decisions, especially when we are able to indicate a policy. And as a question that I have and others have is, what happens if there is advice from an outside supporting organization or advisory committee that is inconsistent with the advice that you get from the GNSO Council? Is there an obligation for the board to come back to the GNSO to discuss that issue. And I ask that because there may be some advice in the future, in the very near future, that some of us may believe may be inconsistent with previous advice given by the GNSO. Everyone discussed it that way.
So to put it on the table. So I think I just want to capture that our commitment collectively as a council is to work efficiently, effectively, and collegiately. But we're seeking, if you like, a reverse commitment or an acknowledgement of that, that we'll be continue to be maintained in the process, and to the extent that a decision even goes against something that we might have recommended, that it comes back to us for further discussion. Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan, and thank you very much. First of all, Jonathan, I want to thank you very much for using the same words that I've been making a mantra about efficiency and effectiveness. I truly support the emphasis that we have throughout the system for accountability and transparency, but it's always occurred to me that we could be completely accountable, completely transparent, and completely ineffective, and that would not be a good combination, and so we actually have to make something happen. To your point, there's a couple of things there. First of all, the syndrome that you're talking about, I don't want to just leave hanging in the air there. I don't have in my head a precise list of the events and incidents, if you will, that you're drawing from. This isn't the right time or place, but let's go document those, not from a point of argument about what happened, but just so that we have a base to have that discussion. And I think, at least speaking for myself personally, in my role as chair of the board and with a heavy responsibility for trying to manage the board process so that it is appropriate and consistent with what everybody expects the board to be doing, I want to understand this dynamic more precisely. It could well be that corners were cut or that the processes were skipped. It could well be that there's differences in understanding. Whatever it is, I will commit to you and to everybody here, but I want to understand all that. Separate from arguing about whether that was the right answer, whether we did it right or not, but I at least want to understand what the issues are on the table. We are engaged in a remarkably parallel discussion with the GAC on almost a mirror. You know, if they give us advice, why isn't that the end of the story? And we say, well, you know, there might be some practicality issues. We don't understand the implementability. Why don't we talk to people who actually understand the subject matter? We're going to talk to the GAC, to the GNSO. We're going to talk to the GNSO. That would, you know, anyway. And the game is on. So getting some coherent understanding of how to engage in these things and to do it in a way that is effective across the community. The board has no separate agenda on these things. I can say that with strong assurance. I mean, we are not sitting there with our own sense of, well, it'll cost us in our business operation or protect this constituency or whatever. We want to see that the whole thing works. So I do want to dig into it, and if we can identify gaps in our processes, either from mistakes in the past or going forward, let's go after those and get those brought to the surface.
Thanks, Steve. I have a queue, and I'm conscious of that. Jeff, do you want to come back in on in that queue as well? Is that your just to make sure I understand your remarks, Steve, when you say dig into it, I mean, I think you're asking for us to perhaps document some examples or write to you afterwards rather than dig into it now.
Right. No, offline. Let's get the history that we are drawing from and get us all on the same page, and then go at it in a very relaxed and non-confrontational way, just to understand what it is that we're talking about.
Thank you. I'm conscious we've got Thomas, Milton, Joy, and I think Jeff after that. Please, Wendy, please make yourself known if I have missed you. But
thank you very much, Jonathan. I'd like to respond to a couple of points that Bruce made with respect to GNSR in general and PDP work in particular. And that was that there is frustration with the time that it takes and that they might potentially lead nowhere. And I think that these two items need to be discussed separately. In terms of time, I guess, and we've been discussing this at the council level, it has a lot to do with simple management techniques for the working group chair to be efficient. And if the working group chair is efficient in moderating the work, it's not frustrating for the participants, and we will come to results at an earlier phase. At an earlier stage. So I think that's been worked on, and I'm quite confident that we're making good progress there. Regarding results, there might be divergence at the end of a PDP, and that's something that I guess we have to accept in a world that is committed to the multi-stakeholder approach. So we shouldn't take for granted, or there should not be a per se expectation that a certain outcome can be predicted when it comes to PDPs. Nonetheless, I think that it's worth going through the process where a PDP needs to be done. Whether a PDP needs to be done, or whether the GNSO Council, after having consulted with the community, with the wider board, with the GNSO, whether that's going to be in the framework of a PDP or in another form of policy recommendation or response, that is based on a very intentional decision by the council and the community. So we only choose the tool of a PDP if a consensus policy might be required as an outcome. But I think that that might be a personal perception, that sometimes the board is rushing to circumventing, or at least what is our perception of being circumvented, to circumventing the council before you have heard what form we might take. And I guess that adds to the frustration on our side, and that adds to the frustration inside the community to commit to community work if it ultimately might be vain if you're doing your thing anyway.
Bruce, by all means, I have a cue, so I need to defer to that, but Bruce, if you're going to come in as a response, please do.
Yeah, just your comment there that in some ways you're saying that it might finish with a divergence of views. I think what's valuable is that those divergence of views are documented and you've called it a halt, if you like. I think that's what's useful, rather than just sort of saying, oh, you know, we're just going to keep on meeting and not getting anywhere. Just a comment, I think that's actually very helpful to be able to say we've spent 3 months on this and we've ended up with these two big views or these three big views. That's useful.
Thanks, Bruce. Milton.
Yeah, I would like to build on the comments that Jeff made and perhaps be a little more specific, perhaps uncomfortably specific about certain things. But I want to emphasize the bigger picture also, in the extent to which ICANN's whole reason for existence is to show that a stakeholder-led non-governmental community can actually make and implement policy. And when that process is circumvented, when these elaborate representational structures that you've created are basically disregarded, you're really undermining the whole rationale for ICANN's existence as a policy-making entity that is an alternative to the standard intergovernmental model. Now, I look at things, you know, as a social scientist from a game theoretic standpoint, and if you tell, you know, you have very predictable interest groups represented. I mean, the interest groups represented in the GNSO typically take very predictable positions on the standard range of policy issues, and it's always a matter of coming up with some kind of a bargain that can keep a winning coalition of them, can create a winning coalition, or which can create the least amount of unhappiness among them to get something through. Now, from a game theoretic standpoint, if you tell all of these interest groups that the bargain you strike here might get superseded, then you've given them all a very strong incentive to not really make the bargain here. So the circumvention becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you can say, well, I didn't get what I wanted out of the GNSO, so I'm going to go to the GAC and lobby, or I'm going to go to the board and lobby, or I'm going to go to the staff and lobby and see if I can get it there, then it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy in which, of course, the GNSO is stalemated. Nobody expects it to come up with a solution because people think that they can do better by getting a solution somewhere else. And Bruce, I really want to mention, you mentioned the HUDAs. I was on the council, as you know, when you were chair, and I seem to recall, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we came up with a remarkable two-thirds majority GNSO Council consensus decision on the definition of the purpose of HUDAs. And what happened? That decision was blocked by GAC members, and you sort of went along with that, is my recollection, and we sort of said, well, let's start over again. That's the problem. Either you're making the authoritative decision here, and everybody has to bargain and realize that that's the decision, or if you throw it up after that, what's your incentive to come to an agreement? What's your incentive to make a concession here, to come to a compromise? How do you do that if you know that the other players in the game are not really showing you their hand and they're really going to go do something else and strike some other bargains elsewhere? So, and referring again specifically to the HUDAs issue, after we went out of the GNSO, we didn't solve it either, right? It's not like getting it out of our hands suddenly made it all easier, right? So I just want to stress the seriousness of the issue, because as somebody who takes ICANN seriously and tries to defend the model in the global arena, I find myself constantly undermined and my credibility easily attacked by these kinds of circumventions of procedure.
And thanks for expressing that so thoroughly and eloquently. I've put you in the queue, Brian. Bruce, since Milton specifically mentioned work you've done together, is there any way, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you want to come back and respond, otherwise we'll progress with the queue. Right, Joy, I've got you next, and Brian, I've got you coming up.
Thanks, Jonathan. Joy Lillycoat, non-commercial stakeholder group. Just wanting to echo and pick up some of the points around the table. I'm finding this a refreshingly frank conversation between the council and the board, so thank you for that. The first is I think it's important to emphasise, although we've talked a lot about the word stalemate and lack of consensus, that there is a very firm and I think unanimous view of the council that our policy development processes are not broken. And function, for the most part, to produce high-quality, community-endorsed policy that works. And that we mustn't let the concerns about stalemate on issues which are deeply felt, where there are strongly held views in the community, skew our feeling about the overall effectiveness and robustness of the policy development process. So that's the first point, and it's come through very strongly in our GNSO Council meetings today. Secondly, in terms of, I think it's strange that we slide from a discussion about the need for consensus policy making and define stalemate as somehow sort of a pejorative position. That simply means there's a lack of consensus. And I think we must be careful to emphasise that not making a decision is sometimes making a decision. It's the community saying that they're not ready for policy making on this point. And I think our concern and the emerging trend we're seeing across a number of areas lately is that rather than stalemate reflecting lack of consensus, it's reflecting, as Milton has said, the fact that parties, constituency groups, know that they can relitigate either outcomes that were agreed or that they have no incentive for consensus because they know that they can pursue lack of decision-making elsewhere. So I think we're wondering as a council how to support the board tai-chiing those requests for intervention back to us more effectively, perhaps even passing those concerns back to us directly to respond to, rather than feeling that somehow the board must justify council position. If the council has followed due process, then the board saying that. And I think also, you know, I and other forums and some other non-commercial stakeholder group colleagues do support and defend the ICANN model. And we want to see a successful multi-stakeholder model that makes public policy, not private policy. And so we have had concerns, for example, about the negotiations with the RAA and concerns about the board, the proposal for the board to have unilateral powers there. Not that this is an issue on which the GNSA Council has direct responsibility, but in a wider landscape concerned about public policy implications of such a power. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. I'm going to keep things moving by. I've got in the line Jeff, Wendy, Wolfgang, Ray, Steve, and Brian. So, and Volker. Volker and Dave. Jeff, please.
Yeah, one of the other items that I neglected to mention the last time was a topic we discussed yesterday, and it seems like now there's since things are trying to get moved along quickly, there have been a number of times where in the past 6 months or so, we've gotten a letter to the GNSO saying, hey, we recognize you're responsible for policy, so in the next 30 days, give us your thoughts on it. And, you know, while we certainly appreciate in those instances coming to us for our advice, things are very complicated. It's very difficult for us within 30 days to actually get to a council view or even a GNSO community-wide view. So what you get in that circumstance is only, at best, one constituency feels this or one stakeholder group feels that. And people wanted this brought up that we appreciate the fact that you have come to us, but you need to let us go through our processes and procedures. And like Thomas said, we don't always have to go through a PDP. There are other mechanisms, but just a recognition that we do have to, the council is not a legislative body, so we have to go through our groups, through our stakeholder groups, constituencies, to get to you the response that we need to get you.
Thanks, Jeff. Wendy?
Thanks. Much of what I was thinking has already been said, so I won't repeat to what Joy and Jeff and others have said. But to echo some of that, I think I'm hearing a lot around the table sort of tensions between speed and deliberation or concerns about stalemate. And I think we wanted to reemphasize among councillors the council's role in policy development, the council's role in reaching consensus in the multi-stakeholder model. Sometimes that is a slow process. Sometimes we need to reach out to our stakeholders. We don't need quite so many levels of indirection in getting there, I think, but we need to hear from the bottom, from the edges, and bring that together. And when we don't get there in 30 days, that doesn't mean we're never going to be able to reach consensus, but it does mean we need the time in the process to get there. Now, that may not feel like rapid fire management that gets everything going on the timeline that everyone might like, but we need to be able to do that. And where there's a tension between getting something done quickly and getting something done by consensus, I think we would all say we want to vet the issues through the consensus process.
Thanks, Wendy. Wolfgang.
Thanks, Wolfgang Kleinwächter from the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. Something has been already said, so I can be very brief. Point number one is, and I want to echo what some people have said here, in our view, there is no policy versus implementation. Policy and implementation are two sides of one process, and we should not make the mistake to disconnect policy development from implementation. And I think all sides are responsible both for policy development and implementation. You could say, or could add in their respective roles, so there are different roles for doing the things, but we should not make the mistake to disconnect policy development from implementation. And the second point, it should be also clear, I think, what Wilton Bendy has said just, Joy, that when we're discussing here these issues, we're discussing, let's say, the very core of the problem, the multi-stakeholder model. And I think this is really what makes ICANN different. What's the difference to other bodies in the global internet governance ecosystem, which is also, you know, the big privilege of ICANN. And you know, I think we are the front runner. We are discovering and exploring new territory in cyberspace. So we are the pioneers here doing that. And one thing should be for clear, that the multi-stakeholder process is much more complicated as a one-stakeholder process. If you have just one stakeholder, you can act much more faster and quicker. So some people have said, okay, multi-stakeholder is faster than the governments. No, I think if you go really to the realities, then the multi-stakeholder process is much more complicated than to reach an agreement among the governments, because this is just one stakeholder group. I think if you go back to the history in the Industrial Revolution, from King's perspective, discussion in the parliament were rather complex and a waste of time. So certainly a decision by a parliament were much more sustainable than a decision by the palace. So, and I think we are now in this transition period where we have to accept that the multi-stakeholder process is a very complicated process, but the outcome is has a higher quality and it's more sustainable, and this is what's counting. And so far, all parties have to be aware about it and should have more patience in this process. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolfgang. I've got Ray, Steve, Brian, Volker, and Dave, David. So, Ray, please.
Thank you, Jonathan. One fundamental thing that's been said time and time again here is that bottom-up consensus policy takes time. And it is absolutely, totally unrealistic to ever, ever put a suspense date on when a policy is supposed to be delivered. It won't happen. And so give me a policy in 30 days is not the right thing to say. Speaking from my experience working inside the regional registry system, there's been times when it's taken like 2 years to develop a policy because of the inability to reach consensus on a particular piece of that. And so, yes, it took 2 years, but in the end, you had something that was very effective. And it was the higher quality that you just mentioned, Wolfgang. So, and in this case, what we're not talking about also is the consequence of allowing time to pass. And it's not a matter of implementations. It's now policy versus programs. And so there has to be a willingness to accept the fact that you may have to halt a program, you may have to delay a program until you can get the correct policy to fix whatever it is that needs to be fixed in order for the program to proceed. If you don't have the willingness to stop or halt or some other modify a program until you get that, then you're always going to be under the gun to somehow or other rapidly produce a policy to fix the problem. So that has to be all-encompassing community acknowledgement and agreement of that. And so in the end, if the whole community doesn't agree and acknowledge that that has to occur, you will always be in this conundrum of trying to push something through faster than it should take to do it.
Thanks, Ray. Steve. I think we'll go next to Brian.
Brian Winterfell, intellectual property constituency. I just want to state, I feel like I'm listening to my fellow counselors very closely. I don't know that we have total unanimity on everything that everyone is saying and expressing, and so I wanted to flesh that out a little bit more. I think that the policy and implementation or versus implementation issue is really important. If we designate something policy as the council and the board sees otherwise and considers something to be implementation and moves forward with something, I know it's been stated here that we feel like we owe or deserve to have sort of dialogue or explanation. You know, the letter that was sent, for example, that Jeff referenced, was not a unanimous, you know, council letter. It was a majority point of view. And so I know we're having a discussion later this week in a panel about policy versus implementation and how that's going to be characterized. But I think, you know, it's important for us as a council to realize that we do have an important role setting policy, but that there are other parts of the community that have input. So, for example, if the government advisory committee puts something forward to the board, you know, what is that role? I think it's interesting that Steve brought that up earlier, because you're having that same discussion with the government advisory committee about feeling maybe some of the same frustrations that the council sometimes feels, where we think if we feel something is policy, then that has to be listened to by the board. If it conflicts with something from an advisory committee, how is that handled? And so I think this is complicated, and I think we're all working together, hopefully, to find a better path forward.
Thanks, Brian. Chris, I'll add you did you want to respond directly to that, dear?
Just really quickly, it occurs to me that it might be worthwhile thinking about making a distinction in these conversations for the future between policy and public policy. There is a very specific role of the GAC in respect to public policy as opposed to policy. So I think it's just worth sticking that in the notes as a thing to remember to talk about, because they do have a different view about public policy.
And indeed, I mean, I think that we had, as I mentioned, and many of you are aware, we had our own interaction with the GAC this morning. And of course, the issue for the GAC is how to be involved with GNSO policy and other policy at an earlier stage. But really, my understanding is to the extent that it has public policy implications. And so it's quite important to recognize that. And so I echo what Chris is saying, that's the crux of that particular issue. Volker, you've been patient, so let me come to you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Volker Kleiman, the biggest stakeholder group. I wanted to pick up on a few comments made by Milton, Wolfgang, Joy, and Wendy, which I fully support. Game theory plays into this, the policymaking process in a way. We are indeed breaking new ground. That means whenever new ground is broken, that the way that is taken is less than the ideal way. But while we are breaking new ground and seeing the processes that we operate under, we should aim to revise those processes, not circumvent them. We should look at the processes regularly and look how we can improve these processes, not how can we get and use the processes to get a better result, but not circumvent the processes to get the result that we want. Because once we circumvent the process, we break it. If we break the process, then suddenly the game breaks apart. In the original way that GNSO operates, you can get a stalemate, but a stalemate is not necessarily a bad thing. A stalemate may be just an expression of the view of the council or the GNSO that the status quo is preferable to any of the other alternatives on the table. That is an important outcome that can be the outcome of the policymaking process, that we prefer what we have over what is offered as new. And I would like everyone to bear that in mind, because in the end, we're not separate entities. We're one, we're ICANN. We're different organs of the same body. We have the different functions, and each and every organ of our body serves that function as best it can. But the heart should never start to try to breathe. The brain should never start to grasp things. And that is something that we should look at. If we should amend the roles that we have, that is something we should look at. But we should not circumvent organs that we have if we think they beat the wrong pace or have their own rhythm.
Thank you, Volker. I'm going to let go to David now, and I'm going to put myself in the queue. John?
To a large extent, I agree with what both my and CSG, also David Cake from the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group, to a large extent, want to both agree with what I've heard my Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group colleagues and Volker said, which is that I think Bruce is very right that stalemate and not coming up with a policy outcome is seen as being something that happens within the GNSO Council, and I think it is something that we sometimes find quite frustrating within the GNSO Council, that things can stall quite easily in its processes, and I do think that is something we need to look at within the review and so on. But also, I want to say that sometimes, as Joy said, if you're a consensus-making policy body and you discover that consensus does not exist, then we should not push on and get a resolution if we are very clear. We definitely need to work out, as an entire organisation, how best to deal with those situations, and we'll agree on what how to deal with it when it clearly is not a consensus. It seems to be, and I must say, as the GNSO, we're not terribly happy with when that seems to sort of fall to board fiat, that it's not, we're not really, we don't really understand what the process is. But I also want to say we should not see that as a failure. We should also not see that as a lack of progress. Sometimes when the GNSO arrives at the point of the process where we go stalemate, we understand that consensus does not exist. We have arrived at that point by working groups putting in significant, looking at legal research, looking at the situations as they exist for stakeholders. Sometimes we end up with quite a much deeper understanding of why consensus doesn't exist, and I think that is sometimes actually quite a valuable process, and I think we are seeing that with some of the higher profile processes that are going on at the moment. We may not have a consensus falling out, but we are certainly coming to a much bigger understanding of the issue, and that's what one of the things the GNSO does. We tend to be thorough, we tend to not skip over the details, and that is something I would like to be appreciated in generally in the policy process. Not just being slow, but sometimes slow because we are thorough, and there's something to be said for that.
Thanks, David. I think we need to start to wrap things up now. I mean, it's been absolutely great to hear from such a diversity of the council, and for all the talk of the council being diverse and at least at times fractured, I think what's interesting is that there is some quite strong and coherent views about some of the things we've heard about. John, did you want to wrap something up, or do you think we can?
John Bard, business constituency. I don't know wrap it up as much as suggest that Volker's comments have brought me directly back to where I started, which is that if there are, in the context of the GNSO review, if as we as a council see the need for some changes, that the parallel paths, I think, can help each of us, can help us meet the requirements of both, and ultimately lead to a stronger policymaking body. The notion of consensus is a good one. I would suggest that if you're not familiar with the voting thresholds at the council, you take a look at those, because consensus is not majority, or consensus is not unanimity, excuse me. And I think that's a key point that sometimes gets lost in debate. So that's really all I have to say, John. Thank you.
I'm going to try and wrap things up before handing over to Stephen. I mean, I think there's a few things. One, we've approached this in a new way, and in particular, I'm conscious that council members have talked and talked quite substantially, and we've heard from a number of different councillors. I want to thank the board for listening, actually, and listening carefully and intently. I'd like to thank council members for stepping up to the plate and expressing their opinions and not and showing that in fact we do feel quite quite strongly about, if not very strongly about, some of these issues. We have a coherence about us. And I think in many ways what I'd like to end on is recognizing that we are forward-looking, we'll embrace a review, we recognize the need to do some things faster, but we've also emphasized the value in doing things thoroughly. And so I hope that we have not come across in a way that's suggests that we are confrontational or accusatory, but rather the start of us being reasserting ourselves, as I said, being on the front foot and trying to establish or re-establish our position, which we collectively believe to be a very valuable and fundamental organ in Volker's body, or at least the general body that is our multi-stakeholder process. Thank you, Steve. Over to you.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, everyone. This has been a stimulating interaction, which is exactly one of the requirements that we try to satisfy. Speaking personally, there's a couple of very key action items, starting with going back and looking a bit in the history to make sure that we are talking about the same set of things and understanding what they are, and some other thoughts that stimulate for me. The board has made a practice in the last few iterations of using these sessions not only as I described, but also to record what we think we heard and then echoing it back as part of the feedback to you and to the community in general. So at the public forum, as part of that session, we will be echoing back what we heard this week plus what we did about what we heard the previous time, and then that will set up for the future as well. Ray and has been taking notes on behalf of the board. Somebody else? Bruce? So that process has also been operating in the background here, and I commend to you that ask you to pay attention to what we said and hold us accountable if we didn't echo back the things that you were trying to tell us, because we want that loop to be to have fidelity, to be a fair representation of what you were trying to say, and it's an honest attempt on our part. So catch us if we miss something, catch us if it comes back in a way that isn't what you were trying to say. I can tell you for sure that we're not trying to spin it, we're not trying to put any torque or on it. We're trying to get it right. So with that, again, thank you. It's met our needs and our expectations, speaking on behalf of the board, and wanting to actually engage and dive into some key things, and we've done that.
Right. Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you, all of you. I look forward to seeing you through the course of the meeting and at some social and other professional functions. Thank you again for spending the time with us. If I could just, we finished 10 minutes ahead of schedule, so I think we'll take a 10-minute break now and then be rejoined by Flavia at 2:30.